episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far. Viewer discretion is advised. Friday morning, only hours after regaining composure from his panic attack, Edwin marched down the long hallway on the elongated corridor of the Fazplex executive office building's top floor. His irritation simmered as he cursed the overly plush carpeting beneath his feet with every determined step. He had been tossing and turning all night without a wink of sleep. He had no reason to doubt what Mr. Burroughs was implementing into the Pizzaplex's network, but he had to be sure. Deep down, Edwin knew he was trying to negotiate with himself through half-baked rationales, futilely attempting to debate his logical reasoning through technicalities. The white tiger robot he witnessed being loaded into the storyteller last night was not the white tiger he remembered from his past. So perhaps, just perhaps, Burroughs hadn't discovered his creation. Before Edwin could reach Mr. Burroughs' office, he collided with the man himself. He bounced off the taller man's midsection, just outside the executive washroom, because men of Mr. Burroughs' stature didn't use pedantic restrooms.
Whoa there, Edwin. Where are you off to in such a hurry?
Edwin, panting at the effort to stay upright on the plushy carpet, caught his breath and wiped his moist forehead.
I was coming to speak to you.
Oh, what a joy for me.
What program are you using to create the storyteller's stories?
Mr. Burroughs flicked an invisible speck off the lapel of his charcoal gray suit and straightened the deep purple handkerchief that matched his tie.
Why can't you trust the storyteller, Edwin?
Just tell me what program you're going to run.
Burroughs just shrugged.
It's a simple template-style software that takes pieces of previously created stories and rearranges them into new scenarios. We've had success with it regarding our VR tech, and I want its capabilities expanded for our AR attractions, arcade games, and, yes, writing our future stories for the Fazbear brand. It's as slick as can be. Beta testing is going beautifully. Just give it time for them to work the kinks out, and you'll see you've been stressing your fragile little mind for no reason at all.
Edwin seriously doubted that.
All right then, who's doing the programming?
Mr. Burroughs waved away the question.
We have our best minds on it. No need to concern yourself with it, Edwin. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm late for an appointment.
Mr. Burroughs didn't wait for Edwin to respond. He sidestepped around Edwin and strode down the hall. Edwin frowned at Mr. Burroughs' retreating figure. There absolutely was a need for concern. If Edwin's suspicions were correct, Fazbear Entertainment had reclaimed one of his old creations, the toy he had designed for his late son, David. And if they had discovered it and implemented its processes without any of the necessary patchwork, Edwin knew that Mimic would pull the very code of the Fazbear network apart and put it back together again in its own twisted imagination. This is episode 38, The Storyteller, part 2. Today's the day of reckoning. Edwin had tried so hard to find a way to stop this dangerous charade as fast as he could, but he couldn't get his hands on any of the storyteller's programming specs, nor could he access any entrances to the tree without the requisite security clearances. And now, to his utmost dismay and mounting dread, the storyteller had been brought online. The so-called big reveal that Mr. Burroughs had orchestrated for the storyteller was an absolute farce. Burroughs had the entire Mega Pizzaplex host a birth party for the damn thing. Posters were plastered everywhere, streamers and balloons adorned every corner, and every flat screen blared advertisements hyping up the storyteller. But what Edwin couldn't wrap his head around was the fact that the storyteller itself, the computer, was hidden inside the trunk. If people actually read the pamphlet, and isn't that a joke in itself, individuals read, the general public does not, they could learn exactly what was inside the tree and what it was doing for the Pizzaplex. But without that information, when the storyteller came online, it was no different than a high-tech Christmas tree lighting up. Still, the audience surrounding the tree oohed and awed with their mouths curved in full smiles at the colorful display. Edwin, however, couldn't help but wonder how much of that was genuine awe and how much was mere play acting to snag a free slice of the massive tree-shaped cake whipped up by the bakers at Chica's Bakery. Edwin didn't help himself to the cake. Instead, recognizing that none had anticipated any issues with the storyteller, he took it upon himself to monitor the program's impact. To this end, he began hanging around the various Pizzaplex venues, observing the behaviors of its characters, and analyzing the new story directions crafted by the AI. Occasionally, the Pizzaplex would display events on quickly built stages in public spaces. It was almost like a soap opera, but played in real time in front of a mass crowd, where the public themselves were in position to be the cameras, watching the over-exaggerated drama and unfolding storylines. Glancing at an employee tablet, Edwin noted that the first story performance of the day was set for Roxy Raceway. Making his way through the main lobby, he took a brief detour down the black marbled hallway adorned with racing memorabilia and go-kart tires before arriving at the indoor racetrack. He peered down at the beauty salon where Roxy was scheduled to interact with lucky guests getting makeovers. And he noticed several issues right away.
Get out! You're wasting time!
Roxy was always a queen of sass and style, self-centered and fiercely competitive. She delighted in admiring herself in the mirror and frequently asked people how she looked, whilst also downplaying the appearance of others around her. Edwin didn't exactly approve of Roxy poking at people's insecurities, and he definitely questioned the decision to program high anxiety and self-esteem issues into her personality matrix. But the execs had been told by some group of marketeers that characters with insecurities sell well in the focus groups, so the uppers effectively greenlit the tech team to abuse her, tampering with her AI, all to profit off of teenagers going through their prepubescent years. Ethics be damned. However, that was all part of her character arc. Her personality was written by the old creative team to be sympathetic to Pizzaplex patrons and still be capable to be rooted for. That sass and self-hatred had now evolved into just being mean for the sake of being mean. The storyteller appeared to have amplified Roxy's inherent lack of empathy and morphed it into pathological cruelty. She was now berating and verbally assaulting anyone in the salon about attempting to be better looking than her. Edwin observed with utmost dismay at some of the girls in the salon visibly distressed, tears streaming down the youngest faces. Edwin hurriedly moved on. The next show was in Rockstar Road, where Chica was scheduled to exit her green room to perform a solo act in the adjacent orchestra room next door. Apparently, the storyteller had a change of plans, because when Edwin had arrived, Chica's attitude had shifted even more aggressively than Roxy's.
Don't make me wait!
Now, the loving yellow chicken had adopted the haughty attitude of a narcissistic diva. She'd even dropped her love for food, a quality that all her storylines revolved around, and was clearly more focused on people paying attention to her. Meanwhile, Mr. Cupcake had developed an unexpected appetite, as evidenced by the staff member struggling to subdue the mechanical pastry. Edwin could have sworn he even heard it growl, behaving with the ferocity of a rabid terrier. Monty wasn't faring any better either. The Green Juggernaut was the star of Monty Gator Golf, where he ruled as king. He had always embodied the stereotypical rock and roller. His signature in any act involved him smashing props or going on over-the-top rampages. He was arguably the biggest drama queen in the band, but that was until the storyteller came online. Now, Monty's rampages were becoming more violent, and he was no longer using props that were designed specifically for him to destroy. Edwin couldn't understand what exactly triggered his outburst, but once he had one, it was almost like he felt guilty for his rampages. He would withdraw from the crowd in a depressive silence, sulking in the shadows or going into the fetal position in the corner. Everyone, all the main characters, began to undergo some level of personality shift. Traits that were once characteristics of them now veered towards the darker sides. The very limited good news was that none of the animatronics had turned homicidal, so thankfully, Edwin could at least breathe a sigh of relief that none of them were going to bite off a guest's frontal lobe. However, the altered dynamics were noticeable to everyone. The only animatronics that seemed to relatively be unaffected by the storyteller were those that were already somewhat off to begin with. The daycare attendant displayed no noticeable changes. His Jekyll and Hyde persona remained intact, and he was just as high-strung as usual. Meanwhile, the DJ at the Fazcade also maintained his usual behavior, with no significant alterations attributable to the storyteller. He did still have occasional odd behaviors towards certain staff members because of his experimental safety protocols, but all in all, he didn't look as though the storyteller had got its fiber optic cables into him. Edwin wanted to report this, but the only person who could truly shut off the machine was the man who promoted its implementation in the first place, Mr. Burroughs. Oh, Edwin could see it now, him going back up into his office, evidence backed up by CCTV footage and eyewitness testimonies of employees at the time, all of it to be dismissed offhandedly by Burroughs. He'd probably say that the storyteller was amping up the conflict. All good stories need conflict. The programming is just working out a few bugs. After we iron out the kinks, it'll work perfectly. Clearly, something was amiss with the Pizzaplex's characters, and it would be naive to think that the storyteller wasn't the primary culprit behind the shifts in the dynamic. Edwin was on the road again this morning, but he was going the opposite direction of the Pizzaplex and the Faz Towers. It had been a week since the storyteller had been active, and during that time, the Pizzaplex was beset with strange malfunctions that none of the engineering team could explain. Fortunately, none of their glitches had posed any immediate danger, according to the engineers. However, their concerns were growing, and they were becoming increasingly vocal about the issues. According to Sebastian, the tech team were becoming neurotic with the high frequency of issues that should not be related to the storyteller's activation. The AI was supposed to generate stories and dialogue, sending commands to animatronics to act out these scripts. That was its primary function. In fact, that was supposed to be its only function. So why, then, were electrical systems shorting out, sound systems producing garbled static, pipes leaking more frequently, animatronics entering lockdown mode at random intervals, and experiencing audio mix-up, where characters spoke with the voices of another while retaining their original personalities? Additionally, locked doors were becoming unlocked, and unlocked doors were suddenly locking, along with numerous other issues and bug reports that had surged dramatically since the storyteller went online. Sebastian assured Edwin that he was monitoring the situation, but it was clear that Edwin was the only one who could take decisive action against the storyteller. To address the issue, however, he needed to gain access to the inside of the tree. and he doubted even Sebastian would be willing to risk his job to grant a favor to the CEO's most disliked employee. Edwin had done his best to surveil the tree during the Pizzaplex's business hours, whenever there was a sufficiently thick crowd around it. Edwin would feel around the hard plastic seams of the trunk, around the area where he saw the night crew enter the tree. He was hoping to find a hidden lock or secondary control mechanism to open the hatch, but his efforts proved fruitless. He abandoned his search yesterday after realizing the constant presence of Fazbear Entertainment security staff around the tree. The atrium was a high traffic area, making it nearly impossible for him to gain entry without drawing attention, unless he timed his entrance to the tree to a stage performance in the main atrium. The moment he opened the door, a guard would likely report it to their supervisor, a report that would eventually worm its way to Mr. Burroughs. Oh, how Edwin knew how much that man salivated for the chance to sack him. Edwin had been with Fazbear Entertainment for a long time, longer if you count its long stint in bankruptcy, which, according to his buyout contract, legally, it did. That came with some perks of immunity thanks to his tenure. However, Mr. Burroughs could still terminate his contract if he had concrete evidence of Edwin engaging in illegal activities on company property, or if Edwin was deemed a safety liability to the staff and guests of Fazbear Entertainment. If Edwin was going to prevent the storyteller from transforming the Pizzaplex into a freak show, he needed to approach the situation strategically and gather some intelligence. Fortunately, his long tenure didn't only provide him with defensive advantages against Burroughs, it also granted him unrestricted access to numerous executive areas throughout the Fazbear Entertainment Empire, including the company's archives. Once a Fazbear project is completed, all the plans and memos are stored in a massive warehouse on the outskirts of town. Edwin always found it ironic that a tech-savvy company like Fazbear Entertainment kept its records as hard copies, packed into cardboard boxes and stacked sky-high on metal shelves that seemed to stretch endlessly. But that was the way things were, and likely the ways the lawyers preferred it. Regardless, it was an opportunity Edwin could exploit. Turning into the archives buildings on the outskirts of town, Edwin parked his compact sedan in the nearly empty lot, save for a single quaint van near the entrance. Shielding his eyes from the harsh sun, he hurried into the building, passing through the front doors and across the small, bland beige lobby. The room featured only a few straight-backed plastic chairs and a long black counter, adorned with a small Glamrock Freddy and Bonnie bobblehead next to a tiny ficus plant. These were the only decorations in the lobby, likely because the woman behind the counter was all the personality the room itself could contain.
Oh, is that you, Eddie? My favorite little guy.
Edwin smiled as he saw the woman behind the counter, ebony-skinned with shoulder-length dreadlocks. It was Chevelle. Though Edwin generally avoided most people's company these days, Chevelle was one of those rare individuals whose happiness and optimism were so infectious they broke through even his armor of misery and gloom. She stood up from her office chair, marking her place in the paperback romance novel she had been reading to pass the dull day. Edwin strutted up to her desk.
Hello, Chevelle. You looking as lovely as ever?
Oh, shut your mouth, Eddie. You're needing glasses.
Thankfully, my vision is 20/20. All the better to see your stunning beauty.
So, what can I do for you today, Eddie?
Edwin felt a little bad for what he was about to ask, but it was necessary.
Well, I was hoping you could let me perhaps poke around a bit.
Poke around?
Thankfully, Chevelle really liked Edwin, and she gave him a playful wink.
I don't see why not. It's not like I can even see you.
Chevelle was looking all around, up and to the side, like an innocent debutante.
Nuh-uh. I can't see anything at all when I've moseyed all the way back here. I'm going to go check on a few things in the back. And if the door happens to close slowly behind me, Who's to say what invisible things might follow me in?
Edwin winked back at Chevelle and walked to the archive door she gracefully held open for him. Chevelle placed her fingers to her lips as Edwin bowed and pretended to doff an invisible cap. She then backed out of the archives and resumed her position behind the counter. Once inside, Edwin immediately began walking down the nearest long aisle. The aisles in the archive building were oppressive, descending into a labyrinth of letter stock and manila envelopes. It felt like navigating a maze of shelves, stacked with cardboard boxes flanked by tables where boxes were being sorted before being stocked themselves. Thankfully, Edwin knew generally where he was going. Fazbear Entertainment had always filed things away in chronological order, and within the chronological date, they filed things alphabetically. The only issue was that while he narrowed down his selection thanks to time frame, all the projects weren't labeled by their in-house code name, but instead, whatever Chevelle deems it to be labeled as. Edwin adored the woman, but sometimes she was a bit too creative for her own good. The Storyteller Tree files might be labeled under the names like Storyteller, Tree, or hell, even just the word The. If Chevelle read more into the tree, she could have labeled it Creative Computer, AI, or even Burrow's favorite nickname for it, Ringmaster. Thankfully, the time period it was filed under was compact enough that he could find the files quick. And he did. They were filed under Boabob. Edwin smiled. He retrieved the cardboard box labeled Boabob and brought it to the nearest table. There he spent the next hour swiftly rifling through all the engineering specs for the mechanical tree. He was determined that there had to be another access point he hadn't considered, perhaps a hidden panel he could open. And there it was. Edwin grinned. It looks like the engineers did build a secondary entrance in case they had to work on the tree during the Pizzaplex's operating hours. They would have to find a way to gain access without being seen, and the method the engineering team chose to hide their alternate way inside? Edwin had to admit, it was fiendishly clever. Once he located the entrance, Edwin skimmed through the relevant notes and design documents. By the time he was finished, he knew exactly how to access the Boabob tree. He planned to make his move that night, just before the Pizzaplex went into lockdown. He just hoped, or more accurately, prayed, that what he feared was in the tree was merely his mind playing tricks, and not Fazbear Entertainment making its grandest mistake in its long and bloody history. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Connection is a healthy and essential aspect of our daily lives. From a warm hug after a hard day to kind words just when we need them, these gentle moments give us an understanding of life's true meaning. But when the ability to connect is interrupted by the hustle of daily life and to-do lists pile up next to the worry of who needs school supplies, sometimes making decisions about our health and the well-being of our loved ones can take a back seat. When it comes to those we care for, vaccines are one of the greatest public health success stories, and along with other measures, are one way to help prevent certain diseases. At Merck, we envision communities where families, healthcare providers, local organizations, and advocates work together. Health equity happens when every person, regardless of age and ethnicity, in every community, has fair access to healthcare, including the vaccines they need. For more information, please visit whyvaccines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Edwin ascertained it to be around 11:22 p.m. when he ascended the maintenance stairwell to the top level of the Fazer coaster. Each of his steps echoed with a metallic clank on the narrow treads beside the track. He couldn't fathom how the engineers managed to work in such a cramped space, with the ever-present risk of a fatal fall. But he had to admit, they had far more guts than he did. Thankfully, he didn't need to worry about being seen on the Pizzaplex's CCTV. The top of the roller coaster's maintenance stairway wasn't under surveillance. After all, who would expect someone breaking into the Pizzaplex to head up there? The answer? Someone trying to get into the storyteller. The secondary entrance was nothing short of ingenious. At the top of the metal stairwell, where the stairs connect both to the roller coaster track and the wall, there was an alcove that appeared to lead to a dead-end hallway. But Edwin, armed with what he had uncovered in the archives, knew it was anything but a dead end. Edwin confidently approached the wall and placed his hand on the upper right corner. As soon as he did, the wall shifted with a clunk, parting before him. He grinned, a pressure switch revealing a false wall. Very clever, albeit a little Scooby-Doo. He hoped to find something similar on the storyteller trunk itself. According to the blueprints, there was a palm scanner, but Edwin was willing to bet that whatever list of Fazbear personnel it recognized, his name would not be on it. But who needed a palm scanner when you got air travel? Thanks to the engineer's ingenuity, Edwin would get into the tree via the maintenance access. As Edwin assumed, they had to have some way to get in without interrupting guest activity around the tree, or the customer experience, as the HR guys like to call it. He had anticipated something beneath the trunk, but the engineers had clearly thought ahead. Sliding the false wall to the side, Edwin saw a small carved-out shelf with only a stripped keyboard connected to a wireless router. Clicking on the enter button, Edwin jumped at the sudden soft hum emitting from the walls. Edwin looked back to the entrance of the hallway, witnessing a telescoping catwalk raise and lower above the track and extend out to the branches of the baobab tree, ending at the top of its trunk before it became nothing but branches. Edwin smiled. This was the fun part, because none of what he just did was forbidden knowledge he did not know about. Once the tree was designed, Edwin had been there for the grueling discussion about how both the maintenance crew would replace the LED lights on the tree and how the cleaning crew would disinfect and dust off the branches. The engineers designed the tree to include metal rungs within the tree itself, concealed inside of it and only jutting out through positive action for the maintenance crew. These rungs allowed employees to climb to the top of the tree, but the branches were far too fragile to support their weight. So, another method was devised for cleaning them. That's why the engineers built the extendable catwalk. Once they had that in place, they also found their answer for where the secondary entrance would be. Edwin took his first steps onto the catwalk, cautiously looking down at the three-story atrium below him. He scanned the area, ensuring no security personnel were patrolling at the moment. He knew the majority of the security guards kept their offices most of the time. The Pizzaplex had an extensive security system in place for obvious reasons, but there were routine patrols, just an extra layer of security. Edwin gripped the metal railings of the catwalk and continued walking, his steps steady as he moved closer to the top of the tree. The catwalk swayed slightly under his weight, but it felt sturdy just enough. Spanning about 80 feet, the distance seemed less daunting than he had anticipated. In fact, Edwin felt a sense of triumph as he navigated the catwalk with ease, reaching the trunk in no time. As he'd ridden the baobab's tree specs, Edwin found that the end of the catwalk had self-anchored to the top of the tree. Just beyond the catwalk, a sliding panel covered the top of the trunk. From what he recalled, the panel wasn't locked. After all, who would worry about a security breach up here? The panel, which had a hermetic seal, slid apart swiftly. Edwin peered through the opening, and saw the first in a series of metal rungs forming a ladder leading down into the tree. This was it. Edwin was about to gain access to the interior of the storyteller. And the knowledge that he was about to confirm his suspicions brought with it his first frisson of fear. What if he was right? Edwin shook his head. There was no point in catastrophizing it. He knew he was right. This was only to remove any element of doubt. Edwin carefully lowered his foot onto the top rung inside the tree trunk. The rung felt thick and sturdy, reassuring him of its security. He then lowered his other foot, feeling around for the next rung. If he were still a young man, he might not be so cautious about maintaining his balance. Fortunately, he found the next rung with ease. From that point on, Edwin was home free. He descended the 75-foot tree trunk as swiftly as he had traversed the catwalk. Upon reaching the bottom of the trunk, he turned around and was struck with horror as he beheld the storyteller in its full, unadulterated glory for the first time. He thought he would be prepared for what he would see. He was wrong. Edwin had seen the tiger head from a distance and knew what to expect, but up close, it was even more unsettling. While he could gauge its size when carried by the three men, standing next to it made the head appear to swell to even more imposing proportions. It was gleaming white, with two glowing heterochromatic eyes, a deep emerald green, and a brilliant blue. The tiger's expression was blank, almost placid. Unlike real white tigers, this one lacked stripes, and its nose and mouth were painted the same color as the rest of its metal surface. The mouth was open, revealing not white, but backlit silver teeth. Beyond the sharp canines, Edwin could see intermittently blinking lights. The absence of stripes wasn't the tiger's only unusual feature. Mounted on one curved, yellow-painted wall inside the trunk, the tiger bust had four extended arms jutting from its neck, two angled upward and two downward. It resembled a bizarre amalgamation of a tiger and a metallic spider. Edwin turned in a full circle, surveying the interior of the hollow trunk. He found it stark and vacant, dominated only by the immense tiger head. The space above was empty, with a round white floor surrounded by circular yellow walls. Both the floor and the wall were covered in white LED lights. Rows of LEDs marched up the walls like an army of ants, while a cascade of light streamed down from above the tiger's head. Additional LEDs were inset into the floor in a crisscross pattern. The illumination bathed the four-armed tiger in a radiant, almost celestial glow. Its eyes sparkled with the light, and the head's white platinum surface gleamed brilliantly. Edwin had to take a minute, too. Well, take it all in. Edwin retreated 12 feet to the trunk's far wall and sat on the ceramic floor tiles. He took three long, deep breaths, letting the cool, still air of the trunk calm his racing thoughts. The images began to gnaw and claw the surface of his mind once more, echoing the same torment that he had when he first saw the tiger head being transported into the tree. This time, however, they were more intense, naturally so. While the blank metallic tiger head had originally stirred those buried emotions, this iteration of the tiger head bore an even stronger resemblance to the one that haunted him. All the familiar signs of his panic attacks surged one after another. His breathing escalated in a staccato rhythm. Sweat trickled down his neck. His stomach churned with unease. He could hear his heartbeat pulsing in his ears, and he began to tremble uncontrollably. Edwin closed his eyes and put his face in his hands. He didn't have time for this right now. He needed to see what he was up against. Edwin mentally put his memories into a blank space, painting black streaks over all those memories and triggers and faces to obscure every detail. It took several moments to blot out the memories. Gradually, though, his breathing steadied and the trembling subsided. Edwin pressed his hand against the cold, smooth interior wall of the tree trunk as he stood up. He took a step toward the tiger head, scrutinizing how it was integrated with the wall. It didn't appear to be mobile. The head and bust appeared to be hardwired into the tree. He didn't know if the arms could move. They hadn't thus far, but he didn't take any chances and get into its possible reach. Edwin turned away from the tiger's head and spotted a small inset in the wall. He found a compact computer terminal. It looked familiar. He drew the keyboard closer and pressed the spacebar. The terminal flickered to life. Of course, the storyteller's operating system was password protected, but Edwin didn't need to get into the system to learn what he'd come here to learn. What he had hoped he wouldn't find, that maybe everything could be explained away as coincidence, was obliterated with a single word. The name of the program the storyteller was running under. Mimic One. His worst fears were confirmed. The monster that he had created, the Reaper that lurked in the shadows of his subspace, had been reactivated. They had brought Mimic back online. No wonder the Pizzaplex's characters had undergone such drastic changes, and why problems were emerging throughout the facility. Unlike before, when it was confined to a single metal body, this time they had granted the beast access to the entire Pizzaplex network, allowing it unrestricted control. A homicidal child with an easily impressionable imagination was playing house, and the animatronics, the attractions, and the guests were all its playthings. It was happening again, and Edwin had no idea what to do about it. Mr. Burroughs adjusted the collar of his indigo blue polo shirt as he stepped onto the main concourse of the Pizzaplex. Despite having changed clothes after his morning meeting with the company golf course, the warm weather had already left his cotton shirt slightly damp from the short walk from his Tesla. Thankfully, Burroughs' nostrils were satisfied by the sandalwood scent his subtle cologne had, masking the undignified odor. Not that any scent of his could be detected inside the Pizzaplex. As he walked through the sliding security doors, Burroughs' discerning nose was immediately assailed by a medley of odors. Spicy marinara, sickly sweet cotton candy, buttery popcorn, and fruity bubblegum, mingling with the more unpleasant smells of soiled toddlers and teenage boys who had overused body sprays. There was also the smell of a lemon that came from the harsh cleaning fluids, but his watering eyes picked those up before his wrinkled nose did. He would need to address the janitorial staff about reducing the bleach and caustic chemicals. There was no doubt that such strong scents compromised the customer experience. Burroughs continued through the main gates and made his way to the Pizzaplex's atrium, taking the long way around. Despite being the head of Fazbear Entertainment, he seldom spent much time at the company's flagship venue. Mr. Burroughs had achieved his position because of his business sagacity and his entrepreneurial shrewdness, not any juvenile affection for video games, robots, or pizza. In truth, Burroughs viewed that what Fazbear Entertainment created was mostly frivolous nonsense. Stupidity served in a flashy display of loud colors and moronic mascots that only the lowest of IQs could indulge in. Despite his disdain for the company's creations, Burroughs had sought a position at Fazbear Entertainment immediately after graduating college. The corporation's remarkable success had inspired him, and he was determined to etch his name in history as one of its leaders. Even if the company was plagued by scandals and the loss of a few employees here or there, he believed that no magnate ever made an omelet without breaking a few eggs. And right now, he only desired to break the egghead of Edwin Murray for annoying him in the most inappropriate manner. As CEO of Fazbear Entertainment, Mr. Burroughs seldom had the opportunity to be anything more than a delegator rather than a commander-in-chief. Not that he hadn't achieved most of his ambitions already. When he was only a child, he planned to be a multimillionaire by the time he was 30. Okay, he'd missed the mark by a few years, but he was where he wanted to be now. He was fulfilled in his personal life, which has time been filled with all his expensive hobbies. A big reason for his desire to have more money than most men was primarily driven by his passion for life's finer pleasures. The simple things like golfing, scuba diving, going yachting, and collecting fine art. This was precisely why Edwin Murray was a source of irritation for him, not just because he finally was able to make an executive decision and see the fruits of his labor being reported as rotten, but he was going to have to miss a regatta this weekend because he needed to see for himself what was going on with the storyteller. According to the employees responsible for monitoring such matters, Sebastian was the name that appeared in all the reports he reviewed. The animatronic characters were engaging in increasingly bizarre behaviors throughout their respective attractions. According to the reports, many on the engineering team believed the storyteller had been responsible for the anomalies, but Mr. Burroughs was certain Edwin Murray was the one responsible for it all. Mr. Burroughs picked up a slice of veggie pizza for one of the vendor's stalls and took a seat at the table near the entrance of the atrium's large dining hall. The pizza was surprisingly decent, a noticeable improvement over the lower quality fare Fazbear Entertainment had served from the dingy roadside shacks of the 1980s. However, the quality of the pizza was not his primary concern today. He was intent on witnessing the animatronic's misbehavior firsthand and, if luck was on his side, catching Murray in the act. As he surveyed the neon-lit arena, Burroughs had to admit it was a bit excessively bright for his taste. While he appreciated colors, he had a strong aversion to glare. If he were to make cost adjustments in the future, he would likely address the overabundance of LED lights. The LEDs wrapped around the circular tables in an oscillating pattern. Every step was bathed in a pinkish glow, and even the crevices between the black and white tiles emitted a white, almost celestial light. The decorations contributed to the visual overload. The archway was neon, the pizza cutouts and mascot faces on the walls were neon, and even the visible servers and tech equipment were adorned with their own array of lights thrown into the suffocating aurora borealis. And then there was the noise. Why did children have to scream so much? Mr. Burroughs had never liked kids. In his view, children were like his employees, meant to be seen and not heard. Their incessant misbehavior only led to problems and inflated the company's expenses each quarter. If he was thinking purely pennies and dimes, it would have been cheaper to trick guests at the Mega Pizzaplex into strapping themselves into a VR simulation of the place. A digital recreation of the entire building would surely cut down cost, and at the very least, the noise. But the last thing the company needed was another lawsuit. Besides, the Pizzaplex was his kingdom, and he'd rather be filled with sycophants of cartoons and cotton candy, lapping in faux luxury, basking in a facade of a greater life, if only a pedestrian version of it. After an hour of nursing a soda and enduring the cacophony of children, and even some adults, chewing with their mouths open, Mr. Burroughs concluded that catching Murray in the act here was a lost cause. Burroughs checked his ruby gold Rolex. While he was intent on catching Murray in the act of corporate sabotage, he also needed to observe the animatronic's misbehavior firsthand. Right now, it was the downtime in between stage shows, which means all the animatronics would be moved to their green rooms in Rockstar Row. Mr. Burroughs got up from his chair and began to weave his way through an adrenaline-driven crowd of screaming, sticky children and overstimulated parents and man-children.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Fazbear Entertainment would like you to put your hands together for the one, the only, Freddy Fazbear.
entering the neon starlit corridor. Mr. Bros took a moment, sidestepping around children and fast walking past two slow moving adults, to appreciate the several glass fronted cases of various props used by the animatronics of old.
For your safety, please stay clear of the doors.
The concept of a museum, or rather a mausoleum, dedicated to Fazbear artifacts was not Mr. Burroughs' idea. In fact, his predecessor had originally envisioned a separate section of the Pizzaplex entirely devoted to Fazbear Entertainment's history, but that plan had not unfolded as expected. However, the idea, and its subsequent complications, did inspire Mr. Burroughs, and in the end, what had been his predecessor's loss became his gain. Mr. Burroughs strode forward to the glass partition of Glamrock Freddy's green room. Well, green room was a misnomer. Freddy's domain was a red-walled area that giant bright blue neon stars dominated on the ceiling. The space was stuffed with various forms of Freddy's iconography. The bear's face was painted on the wall and on posters. Plush dolls of him were placed in the corners and on the couch. And there was even an arcade cabinet in the corner, with Freddy as a playable character. Glamrock Freddy had always been the best-selling act of the entire Fazbear character roster. Beyond just the leading man, Freddy's personality matrix was designed to be harmless, generous, and protective. His soft nature appealed to girls, and boys liked him for his love for video games, Fazer Blast, and being the class clown. As Mr. Burroughs finally got a good sight line into the green room, he could see Glamrock Freddy was currently residing inside. But he wasn't his best. In layman terms, the bear that was meant to be a badass gentle giant was now behaving more like a spoiled brat unwilling to share his toys. Mr. Burroughs raised an eyebrow as he watched Freddy engage in a tug of war with a small pigtailed girl. The object of their struggle was a vintage plush Freddy Fazbear, which Glamrock Freddy was supposed to distribute to any visitor under 10. The little girl was screaming for him to let go, but Glamrock Freddy ignored her, persistently trying to wrest the bear from her grasp. The attendant standing nearby was lost in a daze, unsure of how to intervene. The girl's mother, understandably protective, stepped forward and swatted Freddy's head with her denim purse, demanding the bear to let go.
Huh? Uh-oh.
Mr. Burroughs' heart picked up the pace, and he felt his skin go cold. The animatronics, although were programmed to be entertaining and fun, were still powerful machines at the end of the day, and Fazbear Entertainment's past is not unfamiliar with incidents where the animatronics went off programming, and those instances never ended without a drop of blood. Mr. Burroughs was on the verge of rushing into the room, but only stopped when he saw Freddy finally release the plush version of his former self. The sudden release of tension caused the girl to stumble backwards, colliding with the attendant in the corner. The storyteller program guiding Freddy vindicated that the next course of action for the bear was to turn his back on the girl and her mother, stomp to the far corner of the green room behind his arcade cabinet, hunch his shoulders, and start crying.
What in the name of Fazbear is going on? Murray.
Burroughs gritted his teeth, spun on his heels, and began to walk out of Rockstar Row. He had seen enough. There was no way the story to the program would naturally direct Freddy to act that way. Something was amiss in the Pizzaplex, and now he needed to determine how to address the situation. Plowing through the Pizzaplex brouhaha, only thinking and not focusing on what was going on around him, Burroughs tripped over a toddler who, for reasons beyond explanation, decided the best activity for him to partake inside the Pizzaplex was drawing on the white tiles with an orange crayon. Burroughs gritted his teeth to stifle a curse. Several concerned adults and children gathered around him, helping him to his feet and asking if he was okay. With his eyes still slightly unfocused, the sea of LED colors became even more overwhelming in his dazed state. Regaining his composure, he looked up at the only focal point not dominated by neon, the dome glass ceiling of the Pizzaplex. The cloudy sky provided a soothing contrast, and the sight of a small engineer working on one of the catwalks, struck him as a humorous distraction. And that was when it clicked. He realized how Murray was accessing the storyteller tree. Mr. Burroughs brushed off his suit, excused himself from the surrounding crowd, and hurried toward the Pizzaplex's exit. First order of business, a shower. Clean off the bacteria he contracted for the Pizzaplex's concourse floor and the stench of marinara and candy that had to have lashed onto his hair. Second order of business, draft an email to the engineering team, specifically the lead tech of the storyteller tree, to set up a meeting ASAP. Burroughs knew how Murray was getting in, and he was confident he was the one responsible for the animatronic's quirky antics. Now, all he needed to do was catch Murray in the act, and he had just the devilish idea in mind. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. The following Tuesday evening, Mr. Burroughs had everything he needed to catch Murray in the act. Sebastian, the team lead for the Storyteller Project, was in Mr. Burroughs' office, finalizing a remote control system for him. Sebastian, a tall, broad-shouldered man with chin-length blonde hair that always seemed unkempt, finished connecting a few wires to a transmitter. He then secured a standard Freddy Fazbear face button over the mechanism he had placed near Mr. Burroughs' PC monitors.
Alright, that should do it, Mr. Burroughs. This control pad will give you command of all the mechanisms inside the storyteller tree, including its security measures.
Good work.
Look, I'm really sorry about the security snafu, boss. We just never thought that anyone would sneak in and use the catwalks unless they were fellow employees. Not that we're doing that late at night ourselves. That's not what I was implying at all, of course. We just didn't think to install any security cameras in the area. Or put a lock on the top entrance to the tree. Well, no. Wait, hang on a second.
Don't worry about it, Sebastian.
Sebastian glanced up. His thick black brows were bunched. Clearly, he was expecting a dressing down. Mr. Burroughs had to admit that he was not usually known for his forgiving nature, so he understood Sebastian's trepidation. In this case, however, the engineer's mistakes were fortuitous. Before his meeting with Sebastian last Saturday, Burroughs had contacted the security team to confirm his suspicions. The security on the catwalks was virtually non-existent, so he had instructed the tech team to install new cameras in discrete locations. By Monday, they had captured clear video footage of Murray sneaking into the tree from above and exiting a few hours later. Murray would attempt the same tonight, expecting everything to go as planned. Little did he know, he would be walking straight into a trap. Sebastian tucked in his standard-issued red Fazbear shirt into his black pants.
Well, then, by all means, you're all set, sir.
Thank you. You can leave now.
Sebastian nodded and strutted out of Mr. Burroughs' office. Burroughs himself didn't watch him leave. He was focused on the new control panel before him, and a devilish smile spreading across his face. He just could not wait to use it on Murray. Mr. Burroughs only had to wait a few hours before he could test out his shiny new control pad. He hadn't even left his office all day, sustaining himself on several cups of espresso and postponing all meetings until the next day, determined not to miss his chance to catch Murray off guard. He didn't even leave to eat. He had his secretary, Miss Celia, bring him Chinese takeout and leave it by his door before he finished her shift. By the time he finally spotted Murray, it was about 11:26 p.m. Mr. Burroughs switched the camera feed on his monitor and watched Edwin on the catwalks. It looked like he had a moment before Edwin reached the storyteller tree's entrance, enough time to review the tree's specifications once more. Picking up his box of excellent Peking duck, He began eating while continuing his reading. As he already knew, the interior of the storyteller tree was airtight to minimize dust infiltration into its cooling system. The hollow interior was designed so that once the doors closed, the oxygen available inside was limited to what had entered when the doors were open. The tree had no venting system. Instead, its systems were regulated by a self-refilling cooling system. Murray had to know those details. After all, he was reading the same schematics that he must have gone through. He learned after an inquiry to the security team at the archive building that Edwin had gone through the records without authorization. He'd been keeping the top hatch of the storyteller tree open while he was inside. That was providing him with more than enough air. Murray went behind the false wall, and the extendable catwalk began to protrude. Burroughs' gaze flicked to his control pad. He had been doing that ever since Sebastian gave it to him. With his fancy new button, he now had the ability to close and lock the top of the tree. The thought made him want to touch the tip of his fingers like a Bond villain with sinister glee. The catwalk locked itself into place, and a moment later the little weasel was there. He strutted across the catwalk along the narrow walkway and crawled inside the tree. Burroughs set a 60-second timer on his phone. He was certain that should be enough for Murray to get to the bottom of the trunk. Once Murray heard the door close or tried to leave the tree, he would realize he was caught and would have to call for help to get out. Finally, there would be witnesses to his tampering, and Burroughs could maintain his innocent facade. Like every other board member, he could play pretend and act like he was none the wiser to Murray's espionage.
I have you now.
With a dramatic flourish that he enjoyed immensely, Mr. Burroughs pressed the button on his new control panel. He watched as a steel panel swiftly slid into place at the top of the tree. A satisfying release of steam was audible through the cameras. Now that Murray was all wrapped up in the tree, like a present just for him, all he would have to do is wait for the rodent to scream or call for someone to let him out. And finally, the thorn in his side would be gone. Granted, Mr. Burroughs couldn't see Murray anymore. Security cameras couldn't be placed inside the tree. In one of Sebastian's reports, it mentioned that cameras would display static whenever they were set up because they kept connecting wirelessly to the storyteller's terminal. Mr. Burroughs frowned. For an instant, he was beset by doubt.
Is this underhanded behavior one of a gentleman?
But it was just an instant, and a short instant it was. Locking Murray inside the tree was absolutely the morally right thing to do. For Fazbear Entertainment, Murray was an expensive employee. He made up the bulk of the legacy costs that Fazbear Entertainment had to pay out every month. But he was also a bothersome employee. This wasn't the first time Murray had obstructed or opposed Burroughs' ideas. His interference with the storyteller was particularly scandalous. Murray had brought this on himself. Now, Mr. Burroughs would cut costs once again for the company, saving Fazbear millions in legal fees. As Edwin had suggested at the start of their conflict with the storyteller, Burroughs was making cuts at the top.
Are you all right, Mr. Burroughs? You've got some dark rings under your eyes.
In spite of his conviction that he'd done the right thing, Mr. Burroughs' thoughts were dominated by Murray. He had done it. Even trying to get rid of him, the bastard, had to get one over him. Evolving from a thorn in his side to a thought he couldn't get out of his damn head. He tried to distract himself. Burroughs, and a particularly attractive model, had flown to Cozumel for a scuba diving excursion on Friday evening. However, nothing about diving in pristine waters or indulging in other pleasures could erase the movie reel playing in his mind. Murray's futile attempts to batter his way out of the tree, over and over again, only to exhaust his limited oxygen supply, and then... he always shook his head violently when the last image of Murray made its way into his head. It was now Monday morning, and by now Burroughs expected to be greeted by his security team, or worse, by law enforcement. Murray should have attempted to call for someone to get him out of the tree by now. At the very least, any efforts to break down the door should have been audible. Burroughs should have heard something about Murray's disappearance. Someone should have come into his office to report a suspicion. But here he was, still behind his Queen Anne Credenza desk, and his secretary, Miss Celia, greeting him like nothing at all was unusual.
No, I'm fine. I'm just... there are some noisy pipes in my apartment that need to be fixed. It's been a little hard to sleep. But nothing that a shot of espresso can't fix.
Miss Celia smiled and left to fetch his morning espresso. Burroughs secretly hoped she would bring him some bad news or any update related to Murray or the storyteller. But she acted as if everything was normal. Perhaps her demeanor was due to his disheveled appearance? When Celia returned, Burroughs tried to glean any information from her.
Mrs. Celia, is there anything that needs my immediate attention for today?
Nothing I would call immediate, Mr. Burroughs. Just a board meeting this afternoon, and the Storyteller Night Team wants to discuss some peculiarities that have been reported to them about the program. But Sebastian has informed me he would accommodate to your schedule.
Oh, good. Good.
It was not good.
If that is all you require, sir, I will head back to my desk now.
Mr. Burroughs had mulled over Murray's whereabouts over and over as the day passed. During the board meeting, he was barely aware of what was being discussed. He couldn't keep his eyes off of Murray's empty chair. When paperwork came across his desk, he just looked for a line and signed his name. He was pretty certain everything being talked about was something he would agree with.
Where are you, Murray?
In the late afternoon, things got even more tense when Mr. Burroughs met with Sebastian again to discuss the strange behavior of the animatronic characters.
I really do hate to be the one to report this to you, Mr. Burroughs. Mind you, this is also coming from HR as well. But in the short time the Storyteller has been in operation, we've received an increase of over 400% in customer complaints as it pertains to animatronic interactions and guest well-being. Even the AR attractions have become a rather controversial topic, sir. The AR Resort reports that parents have had their kids come out of the attraction in tears because for some reason they spotted a dead body at the bottom of the pools.
Have any of these reports been substantiated?
When it comes to the dead child in the AR Resort? No. When it comes to Glamrock Chica calling little girls fat? Yes. With all due respect, sir, and I understand that this machine was your brainchild, you can't deny that the Storyteller has objectively put guests and staff on edge when it comes to its decision-making. Sir, we haven't been back in the tree ever since we hooked up the tiger. Well, I would like to run a full diagnostic on the machine, if you would allow me to, of course. Maybe me and two of my top men or so to go late tonight inside the
no!
tree.
No!
Mr. Burroughs' sudden raised voice made Sebastian cock an eyebrow.
Let's just wait and see what unfolds. The Storyteller probably has a long-term plan. Let's see what it is.
Sebastian and his team looked at Mr. Burroughs like he was losing it. And he possibly was. He needed to know what happened to Murray, and he needed to know now.
Now, if you will all excuse me, I have to run. Meeting adjourned.
As you wish, sir.
Burroughs left the meeting in a hurry and went to splash some water on his face in the washroom. The worst possible outcomes were the only ones that came to mind. Perhaps Murray had suffered a heart attack upon realizing he was trapped? There was no other reason he hadn't caused a commotion over the past week. Unless... Burroughs gritted his teeth. Oh, he hadn't given Murray enough credit. The little rat was clever, which was his only redeeming quality. The reason no one had reported hearing Murray call for help was that he must have found a way to sneak in and out of the tree through an alternate route that was eluding Burroughs' security measures. That had to be it. He was being outsmarted, and him losing his mind was Murray's way to get him fired from the board. That was the only explanation. Mr. Burroughs wanted to consult the engineers to test his theory, but doing so might expose his actions. This was a duel of wits between him and Murray, and now was Burroughs' move. He had to take action himself. Mr. Burroughs decided that the best course of action was to confront Murray directly. Given the surge in hazard reports, it was clear that Murray was tampering with the storyteller terminal during the day. Burroughs planned to catch him in the act during the evening, when the Mega Pizzaplex was at its busiest. As CEO, Burroughs had the authority to access any part of the Pizzaplex, but he wanted to avoid drawing attention to the entrance of the tree. By timing his approach to coincide with the height of the atrium's activities, he hoped to mask the sound of the tree's internal mechanisms with a cacophony of 1,000 rowdy children. Oh, how ironic. The one instance where their noise became an unexpected advantage. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. By the time Mr. Burroughs reached the storyteller tree trunk, he was worked up so much that he was in a full froth of anger. Murray was such an enormous pain in Burroughs' backside, the little rat couldn't even die properly. Oh, he wanted to shake the old man until his teeth fell out of his skull. Would serve him right for putting Burroughs through this ordeal. Burroughs glanced over and saw that the stage show was in full swing. The audience had spilled into the open dining area, their attention completely absorbed by the animatronics performing on their elevated platforms. The vibrant chaos of the spectacle created an ideal cover for Burroughs as he made his way to the tree. Burroughs pressed a hidden trigger by the hidden main entrance door of the tree. Gradually, the palm scanner for the security override materialized. He placed his palm on the screen, and after a moment, the door slid open with a soft whoosh. Mr. Burroughs ducked through the 6-foot doorway. As soon as he was inside the hollow tree, the door snicked shut behind him, sealing him in with the dim metallic interior of the storyteller tree.
Murray! Murray, I know you are in here! The game is up! I know you've been behind it all!
No answer. Mr. Burroughs charged forward into the main room beyond the doorway.
I didn't expect you to stall as long as you did, but there is no use in... What in the world?
Mr. Burroughs surveyed the room with a mixture of awe and frustration. His brow furrowed as he struggled to grasp the unexpected scene before him. In his mental projection of the confrontation with Murray, he had envisioned his adversary hunched over a keyboard, either reprogramming the storyteller's code or issuing commands for it to execute. However, Murray was nowhere to be seen. Perhaps he was wrong and he continued to elude him by sneaking in at night. But clearly he'd been here. The entire interior of the hollow tree trunk of the storyteller, to about 6 feet up the wall, was plastered with large sheets of construction paper. The paper was in an array of colors. Odd for Murray, who had always battled him in his love for color contrast, and each sheet was marked up with black marker. Mr. Burroughs approached the nearest wall and scrutinized each illustration. The sheets of the paper were adorned with peculiar stick figures and cryptic symbols, none of which were familiar to him. There were squiggles, squares, loops, and triangles within triangles. Were these mathematical equations? If so, they were gibberish to Burroughs. The only symbols he could decipher were letters of the English alphabet that Murray wrote, which appeared repeatedly on nearly every sheet, forming two distinct words. I'm sorry. What was all this? What had Murray been trying to do? For a full minute, Mr. Burroughs circled the interior of the tree, trying to make heads or tails of it. He barely glanced at the storyteller itself, which was also covered in construction paper. He just kept looking up and down the walls, trying to decipher the meaning behind some form of code or madness that he didn't understand. Mr. Burroughs' foot hit something. Something that wasn't made of the usual metal and plastic of the storyteller. Burroughs looked down. He gasped and covered his mouth with his hand. Mr. Burroughs was wrong. Murray hadn't been sneaking in and out for the last week. He'd never left. And now, he never would. Half buried under a mound of blank construction paper, Murray was sitting, doubled over, a black marker clutched in his curled, motionless right hand. His eyes were wide open and cloudy. His other hand was clutching another piece of construction paper. He must have died in the middle of scribbling yet another odd stick figure, because this paper had already been scratched with his dying motto, I'm sorry. Mr. Burroughs backed away from Murray's corpse. His feet stumbled, and abruptly, he was gripped by the need to get out of the tree. Every one of his neurons in his brain were sounding alarm bells, telling him to flee. Mr. Burroughs whipped back to the door in a panic. Mr. Burroughs accessed the palm reader display. He put a now trembling hand on the screen and waited for the door to whisk away. But nothing happened. He pressed his palm against the glass. Nothing. Then it clicked.
No. No, 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 no!
The security override. The security override that he had installed in his desk was still active. As long as it was active, any method to escape from the inside through traditional means, the ones he read about in the schematics, would be overridden. Even his own palms were ineffective against the lockdown command. He was trapped. Mr. Burroughs didn't hesitate. He immediately began pounding on the tree's exit door. He battered it with his fist, kicked it with his leather-soled shoes, and screamed and howled and bellowed to the top of his lungs. But he couldn't be heard. The energetic performance of the glam rock band was blocking out his screams. And even worse, it was getting hard to breathe. Trying to control his racing heart, Mr. Burroughs scanned the small space for a solution.
Think. I'm a smart guy. I can figure this out.
Burroughs' gaze focused on the cables that extended from the storyteller. Elementary. If he broke the connection between the storyteller and the rest of the Pizzaplex, all the attractions would malfunction. An engineer would have to come in and check on the system. That should be protocol. Mr. Burroughs dove towards the cables, grabbing them with both hands. He jerked the cables away from the storyteller's metal platform. The cables came free with little pull. But even when they did, the white tiger head that was the storyteller, its head lit up like a starry night sky, didn't go dark. Burroughs growled in frustration. Fine, if the cables wouldn't turn off, then some old-fashioned pummeling would surely break its connection. Burroughs began pummeling the storyteller, cracking its screens and consoles on the walls. The tiger head continued to glow. Mr. Burroughs, enraged, snapped the arms off from the chassis beneath the tiger's head. He went for each arm, one after the other. With nothing seeming to change, he took one of the arms and began to pummel the muzzle of the storyteller. The white tiger still remained active. Mr. Burroughs sank to the floor. It was starting to get even harder to breathe. It was pointless, he knew it. Even Murray couldn't get it out of his place, and he clearly knew more about this machine than he did. He was going to die here. two hot tears cascaded down his cheeks. He looked back at Murray. He was leaning against the main PC terminal for the storyteller. Staggering to his feet, Mr. Burroughs lunged towards the console. He had one last card up his sleeve, but he doubted it would work. He typed his password into the console. The screen flashed. Password failed.
Idiot.
Once again, he collapsed to the floor, leaning against Murray's cold body for support. Mr. Burroughs sucked in the air. His head was beginning to feel light. The control panel had overridden every out he could think of, and the performances outside would sound at any and all sound he could make and hear. In fact, he thought he could hear it become louder. He tried to stand, but he couldn't. It was all useless. There was no way out. Even so, Mr. Burroughs refused to believe the facts of the matter. He crawled towards the doorway, propping himself against the back wall, and kicked at the door with the last remaining shreds of his strength. The storyteller tree would later get retired from the Pizzaplex, quietly, without any fanfare. According to Fazbear Entertainment's marketing research, while the Pizzaplex patrons had increasing complaints over the entire venue overall, no one put two and two together as the issue regarding the animatronics were related to the storyteller. Most of the public just saw it as a marvelous sculpture in the middle of the atrium. A tree of technology, sprouting from the concourse of the Pizzaplex itself. In fact, it was the littlest kids who loved the storyteller tree the most. The chunky tree, with its swollen belly-like appearance, made the little kids giggle, and the older kids wished they could get inside. Kids of all ages liked to circumvent the tree, chasing one another all around until they tired themselves out. And after they exerted all their energy, panting for breath, one by one, they dropped. And with all that said, this ends tonight's program of Into the Night. How did Fazbear Entertainment get its hands on the Mimic One program? What will this mean when the storyteller becomes activated? And most importantly, has this program been the creature pulling the strings behind the scenes? Or is there someone else toying with experiments they cannot fully control? Find out all this and more next time on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining in our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon or merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. As always, I have been your host, Nick, and I would like to thank all of you once again for listening. Have a good night,
and drive home safe.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated.
CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.